Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. The Boreal Conservation Project marks an important step towards sustainable development and habitat protection for our northern forests. This initiative, spearheaded by Ducks Unlimited Canada and Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, will support research on boreal wetland ecology. And applied research in the agricultural arena is getting a big boost at the Olds College Center for Innovation. The opening of a new tissue culture lab for seed potatoes is just one example of the great things happening in this field. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. The boreal forest is second only to the prairie pothole region in importance to waterfowl as a breeding habitat. And then there are all the migrating songbirds and other animals and plants that depend on the boreal ecosystem. No wonder Ducks Unlimited Canada is turning its attention to the boreal wetlands. DU has recently joined with Alberta Pacific Forest Industries to begin a unique partnership called the Boreal Conservation Project, something which both organizations hope will be a model for others to follow. Gary Stewart is the manager of conservation programs for the Western Boreal Program with Ducks Unlimited Canada.
Back in the mid-90s, when we first started seriously looking at the Western Boreal, we quickly became aware of a couple of key things. We have two groups of ducks, scaup and scoters, that breed primarily in the boreal that were in serious long-term decline over the last 20 years or so. And nobody really knew why. When we started to investigate this huge forest land some more, we found out that very little, almost nothing, was known about the wetlands and the water in this forest. Most people wouldn't understand how much of this forest is not forest. In some places, the landscape is over 50% wetland and water. And nobody had ever really looked at it, either in a scientific way or in a traditional land use way. So it prompted us to get quite serious about starting to gather good information about this whole area, and hopefully find out why these birds are declining and develop strategies, conservation strategies, that we could help industries and governments do a better job of conserving it.
These areas are not untouched because there is a lot of industrial development going into that area between forestry and oil sands development, diamond mining, all those sorts of things. What do you see happening there?
We've been enlightened, I think. We formalized our program in 1997, and we're just about to announce our boreal program nationally for Ducks Unlimited Canada. This is a huge step for our company, getting really engaged in conservation on public lands. Basically, we have a two-pronged approach to conservation in the boreal. In the pristine areas in the west, primarily north of 60, we're working strategically with Aboriginal partners and governments and other conservation organizations to identify and permanently protect large wetland-rich landscapes. If you look at the Mackenzie River Valley, for example, there really is a lack of protected areas. Compare that to Alaska right next door, where half the state is under permanent protection. So these are world-class wetland systems, northern duck factories, water bird factories that need permanent protection. And in the north, we're fortunate because the Aboriginal governments and communities rely on these wetland areas for traditional hunting, fishing, trapping, gathering. So it's a community-led process in the north, and we're aligned very closely and very nicely with First Nations, who also want to keep these rich habitats for forever.
Ducks Unlimited Canada has just entered into an agreement with Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. It's called the Boreal Conservation Project. How's that going to work?
Well, that's the second part of our two-pronged approach. In the commercial forest, south of 60 in the west primarily, We are working with progressive companies, certainly forest companies like ALPAC, that aren't afraid of the consequences of science. And we're taking a watershed-based approach to developing a conservation plan that will include a number of things, special management areas, new best management practices around wetlands and water. It's, for example, there's a lot of work we're involved in initially in identifying high conservation value forest areas within the FMA. Areas like riparian habitats, water source areas. Water is really a top of mind and a key issue for all Albertans and certainly for the communities that exist in and around the FMA. So this is going to be a geographic information system-based decision support system, which will help ALPAC and the other industries do a better job of becoming truly sustainable in their work in the forest.
Do you expect to extend this to other industries? For example, some of the energy companies that really use a lot of water?
Yes, we do. We're hopeful we'll be able to bring all the other industry users in the forest into the fold. The conservation plan is for the forest. It's not just for forestry. There's a lot of other impacts and uses occurring out there. And it's going to be guided by good, strong science, good traditional land use information. So we're hopeful that, again, looking for leaders in all of those industries, the oil sands, the conventional oil and gas, the softwood, saw log operators, we're hopeful that all of them will join. Actually, one of our most important partners is the provincial government, because ultimately they are in charge of policy and regulations, and we're already engaged in good conversations with the government about bringing them in as a partner in this ambitious project.
Well, it must be ambitious because you've just moved into a whole new office, and it's not a hole in the wall. This is a big operation, and it's dedicated just to the boreal efforts that you're doing. What kind of science is going to be involved in this?
A lot of the science, because of our history, we're a habitat conservation organization, and we're all about water and wetlands. So that's where one of the biggest deficiencies in the science is. It's on the water layer of this forest, which I already said was so extensive. We're also going to take advantage of a lot of the terrestrial science work that's been occurring and is ongoing. We're learning from the HEAD project you spoke about earlier, and going to be applying a lot of the results of that science on the FMA. And under the leadership of Dr. Kevin DeVito and an expanded group of scientists, which we're in the process of pulling together, we know nothing. One of the few things we're finding out right now is making our challenge even more complicated, because it's not just the surface water we're concerned about. The subsurface water is also extremely important. In this forest, unlike the Canadian Shield to the east or the mountainous Cordillera, we have very deep, rich mineral soils, organic soils. A lot of the water and a lot of the nutrients that are maintaining productivity in wetland systems actually are moving under the ground. So it's a huge challenge, and we probably couldn't have picked a more challenging place to do it with all the competing land uses, but we're hopeful that we can get enough partners together to make this work. It's trying to understand ecology and then apply it in a sustainable fashion, and we'll probably never understand ecology, but I think we can do a better job than we're doing now.
You're heading off to the World Forest Congress. What's your message going to be there?
Well, our message will be, I think, consistent with a lot of other folks. So a lot of people in the world right now are looking at Canada's boreal forest as one of the last great opportunities globally to do some world-class conservation along the lines of our approach to conservation, the protected areas and the world-leading sustainable development. Canada is blessed with about 25% of the world's boreal forest. And though it's getting kind of impacted in the south, there are still huge areas that are, you know, ecologically intact at very large levels. And the time to do this is now. The ecological goods and services provided by this forest being maintained and sustained and all its functions, things like there's more carbon stored in the wetlands and soil of the boreal than any other place in the world. More freshwater. I think Canada has about 12% of the world's freshwater. This is a huge resource that not only is important locally, but globally. And of course, we need the jobs too, and we need the economy. So it's we just have to learn to do it better in a more sustainable fashion.
Thank you very much, Gary.
You're welcome.
That was Gary Stewart, Manager of Conservation Programs at the Boreal Office of Ducks Unlimited Canada in Edmonton. Alberta Pacific Forest Industries has pledged $1 million towards the Boreal Conservation Project with DU. I spoke about this partnership with ALPAC ecologist Dr. Elston Dews when we met up on the hillside at Steepbank Lake, which is in ALPAC's forest management area.
We're currently going to be focusing the Boreal Conservation Project on the ALPAC FMA area and a slightly larger area around it that basically encompasses the Landsat images that we've used for this study. So it's a bit bigger than the 5.8 million hectares that we've got in the FMA area.
What are some of the things that you'll be looking at?
In the Boreal Conservation Program, what we're going to do is we're going to build on the 10 years of research that Alberta Pacific has been doing in collaboration with other organizations and see where we can fill some of the knowledge gaps. One of the area that we have been doing research in but need more work in relates to issues around water. And so with Ducks Unlimited, we want to take a look at the water layer and what's making use of this. And so we're going to look at both surface and subsurface water. We need to know how water is moving through this landscape and then take that knowledge and make changes to our land use practices in relation to what we're learning.
Well, right now we're sitting on the bank of Steepbank Lake. What different kinds of bodies of water are here within ALPAC's FMA and through the boreal forest?
In terms of water bodies, you've got, you know, a variety of lakes, streams, rivers, but, you know, probably 50% of the ALPAC FMA are in a variety of wetlands that are either open water or closed in that they're bogs and fens. And so there's a variety of different types of water, and those are just more sort of the surface ones. And then you've also got water that's flowing in shallow subsurface areas that you need to be taking into account as well.
With your partnership with Ducks Unlimited, they have an emphasis on waterfowl. What brought the two of you together?
Well, both organizations use a knowledge-based approach. We're both very proactive. And I think those are two key areas that brought ALPAC and Ducks Unlimited, in addition to Ducks Unlimited in the last few years, beginning a new focused program on the boreal forest. And so it became a logical connection for two proactive, knowledge-based organizations to come together and build on some common-sense conservation approaches.
There has been some research started already. There's the HEAD project, which is looking at hydrology. Previously, there was the Trolls project. What are some of the things, then, that you want to do that will help you change the way you were practicing, say, before, and the way you will practice in the future, now that you have this conservation project going?
It's probably two different areas, one in the planning phase and the other one would be in the operational phase. In the planning phase, differences that we may do will be to move away from using straight line planning boundaries. Typically, we had been using township boundaries as our boundaries for our planning units. And with the Boreal Conservation Project, we want to make use of more natural boundaries. Watershed boundaries are one that come to mind, but you also might want to look at landform boundaries. So that is the direction that we would see changes being made through this Boreal Conservation Project, going from unnatural to natural planning unit boundaries. On an operational side, you may want to take a look at the landform you're in and the way water is moving either over the surface or subsurface, and use that information to place your roading location in such places, or when you're constructing your roads, make sure you've got the appropriate types of cross drains and culverts to make sure that you're not impeding the water that's either flowing over the surface or in the shallow subsurface aquifers.
Are there any other large initiatives that deal with boreal conservation that will fit in with what you're doing now with Ducks Unlimited?
In terms of possible either partnerships or collaborative or synergistic research organizations or projects that we might want to look at, there are certainly a couple. Canadian Wildlife Service is looking at, with renewed interest, at the boreal forest, and the Sustainable Forest Management Network is certainly a logical linking organization that we would want to be looking for opportunities to collaborate with.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Cheryl.
That was Dr. Elston Dews, an ecologist and business unit leader on the biological sciences team at Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. I also spoke with Gary Stewart of Ducks Unlimited Canada. For 90 years, students have been going to Olds College to learn about agriculture, horticulture, and animal management. Now, the college has taken a big step into the world of applied research with the establishment of the Olds College Center for Innovation. I recently attended the second annual partners meeting for the OCCI, and the afternoon was capped with the opening of a new tissue culture lab where Penn Biotech will further develop its new technology for propagating seed potatoes. Jay Lee is the CEO of Penn Biotech, a company with connections to Korea and the Far East.
Ladies and gentlemen, this ribbon-cutting ceremony today represents the culmination of a lot of work. Work that started with a drink on an airplane coming from China or going to China between our Dean Pat Bedard and Mr. Jay Lee. As you see from the presentation earlier, Penn Biotech and OCCI have come a long way on this project so far. But we're just at the start of something that we hope will develop into world-class technology and have a significant impact on the potato industry in North America. Gentlemen, if you would please cut the ribbon and officially open the tissue culture facility.
Go ahead.
Jay Lee, and I'm with the Penn Biotech Inc. About a year ago, we had an opportunity to visit China as some type of a SIDA program. So I went to China with Pat and a group of Olds College. That's when we began discussing to set up the lab here.
What are you going to be doing with the lab? Because you deal with potatoes.
We're going to produce both microtubers and a plantlet. And then once we produce those products, then we'll be producing mini tubers from the greenhouses.
How does that differ from conventional ways of producing seed potatoes? What makes your system better?
Our system would be better because our product, the microtuber, would produce more mini tubers at a lower cost. So that price advantage would be transferred to the lower generation.
Now, why would you do that here rather than anywhere else in the world?
Alberta is a major producer of a seed potato. Canada is one of the few countries that we maintain the patent. So we decided to have Alberta as a stepping stone or beginning place.
Is this the beginning of a way of changing the industry?
We definitely hope so. We would like to lower the cost of higher-end seed so that growers can use one generation earlier than the conventional E3 class. So in other words, if we can produce E2 at a cost of E3, this will eliminate one generation, and it brings that much benefits to the growers.
So it actually takes less time, like fewer years.
We'll say 1 year at least, yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Jay Lee, CEO of Penn Biotech Incorporated. After the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the Tissue Culture Lab, I talked with Rick Toffany, CEO at the Olds College Center for Innovation.
The fact that the college has been here for a long time and has a long list of clients that work with the college was a real help. Secondly, Alberta is blessed with many, many people, many, many business opportunities, but really not a whole lot of scientists in agriculture area. And so bringing these scientists here really just added to the infrastructure that was already in place. It also adds to the number of new clients, like a Penn Biotech, that will come to Alberta because the scientific research capability is here now.
What are some of the areas that you're going to focus on?
We have four areas of focus. The first is what we call microbiology and agronomy, of which this Penn project is part. The second is bioprocessing, which is really the extraction of products from crops, but really focuses on the value-added component, to take a primary product and turn it into a secondary or a value-added product. The third is bioenergy and waste management. That's taking what we used to call composting, taking the energy out of it first and turning it into something useful. And the lastly is livestock research, like the Natural Fiber Center that we saw earlier today.
We've just had a ribbon cutting. What's this for?
Well, the ribbon cutting represents the opening of this tissue culture research facility and production facility. And Penn Biotech is really a small company. They need a location to do their production work and research work, and they've chosen OCCI because of our scientific expertise. And that's really following on with two or three other companies like Transfeeders and Greenleaf that both started their lives here on Olds College campus and have now graduated and have moved off.
What's interesting is this is an international company. They're from Korea.
Yes, it is. In fact, it really is indicative of when you get the right client together with the right researchers that you can form a partnership, and it doesn't matter what part of the world you come from.
What's next for OCCI?
Well, what's next? We're really hoping to make inroads into bioenergy. The use of waste materials in small and medium-sized communities in rural Alberta to produce a usable end product. It may be energy, it may be composting, but the initiative is to reduce the amount of requirement on concrete waste management infrastructure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Rick Toffany, CEO of the Olds College Center for Innovation. Olds businessman Jim Smith chairs the OCCI's Board of Directors. In a very short period of time, the board has pulled together an impressive list of clients and partners.
We have been fortunate in having attracted quite an array of funders and partners, and I guess we all look at them as partners. We have organizations like AVAC, the Canadian Foundation for Innovation, Alberta Agriculture and Rural Development, Food and Rural Development, Western Economic Diversification. We have a number of industry partners such as McCain's, some private donors, one of whom was recognized here today. And I'm sorry, I'm almost concerned about missing some by omission rather than commission. We have quite a long list of people who've been very supportive of the center, and I'm sure I know that I've missed a few.
With so much competition for research dollars, what are you doing that would attract research here?
Well, I think this comes back to the foundations we talked about earlier. We have a strong track record of working with industry and connecting with the learning. And we feel that we do a good job at applied research. We don't do as much of the pure research that, for example, our colleagues at the universities might. But we see us as being a piece in the overall picture, and we do a lot of collaboration with other research organizations who have expertise in areas that that is complementary to ours.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, and thanks for your interest in Olds College and the Olds College Center for Innovation.
That was Jim Smith, chair of the OCCI Board of Directors. Also in attendance was a visitor from Texas. Dr. Chris Lufton is a professor of animal science with Texas A&M University. He's involved in collaborative research on alpaca wool with the Olds College Center for Innovation.
We study sheep and angora goats and their fibers, and we have an established fiber testing lab. And when Mrs. Ruth Elverstad was looking for a partner to work with her and the alpaca project here in Olds, she needed somebody that could help with the fiber testing on these animals. So I think that was what our first contact was about.
Are you making a comparison between alpacas in Texas and those in Alberta?
Absolutely, yeah. Our interest is, in the research project, we're studying the effects of nutrition. We have these animals on three levels of nutrition at both locations. The effect of location, a southerly location, and this one in Olds. And also age. You know, we'll be doing this experiment for about 4 years. So we'll have an age effect. As these alpacas get older, the fiber will tend to coarsen. And so several facets in one experiment.
What are you hoping to get from this?
Well, I'm hoping to get some basic knowledge about alpaca fiber production. It's mainly absent in the literature. There's plenty of information about sheep and even Angora goats, but not too much logical explanation of the effects of nutrition, age and location on alpaca production. But I know the people at Olds, and ourselves for that matter, are anxious that to help this infant alpaca industry go beyond the expensive pet stage, which is where it was. I think in some quarters it's already beyond that, but help the industry grow and hopefully provide a new livestock and fibre industry to both Canada and ourselves.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That was Dr. Chris Lufton of Texas A&M University. Also at the second annual partners meeting for the Olds College Center for Innovation were Jim Smith, Rick Toffany, and Jay Lee. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during the program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Ingenuity, the Capital Region Innovation Center, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Research Council, the University of Lethbridge, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.